Welcome to session number 5 of the Emotional Eating Breakthrough Program. I'm Mark David, founder of the Institute for the Psychology of Eating. Glad you're here. Glad we're here today together. The title of today's session is Working with Toxic Dietary Beliefs. I'm going to define that in a minute. So I hope you're continuing to do the practices and the exercises that will help you transform emotional eating and help you finally find freedom and peace with food. Work on self is your absolute goal. As you know, as you've learned through your own life, and you're relearning here, there aren't any quick fixes for emotional eating. There's no magic pills to take. But the good news is you are learning a powerful and effective roadmap to guide you to exactly where you want to go. Success is a direct byproduct of your efforts and you doing the practices. So I know you're going to have the breakthrough that you deserve if you haven't had it already, and there's more to come. So let's dive in. There's an old saying from the ancient Taoist philosophers. It goes something like this. Learning happens through daily addition, and wisdom happens by daily subtraction. I'll say that again. Learning happens by daily addition. Wisdom happens by daily subtraction. So what does that mean? Well, traditional learning, the kind that you and I did in school, traditional learning happens when you just put more information in your head, more facts, more details, and that's what we generally consider learning. You memorize things. True wisdom happens by subtraction, meaning we let go of something. We let go of old, outdated beliefs, old ways of thinking that no longer work for us, or perhaaps they never did work for us. Wisdom comes when we remove thoughts and concepts from our mind that simply don't make us a better person. So this session is all about identifying some of the old, inaccurate, and harmful beliefs that are likely driving emotional eating. Once you identify those beliefs, you can actually replace them with some better ones as you begin to let them go. And the net result is that you can actually move much faster and far more efficiently on your journey to transform emotional eating. So let's take a moment and define the term toxic dietary belief. So toxic dietary beliefs are assumptions about food, body, and life that can be as harmful to our well-being as any toxic food or substance. These are beliefs that hold us back and often send us in the exact opposite direction of where we truly wish to go. So here's a bold statement that I've learned from decades of experience with emotional eating, and it's this. We cannot heal emotional eating or any challenge with food until we change the toxic beliefs that keep those challenges locked in. So think of it this way. Our beliefs create behaviors. And our behaviors can impact our metabolism, our brain, our health. Example, if you believe healthy foods are good for you, I think healthy foods are good for me, that can lead to the behavior called eating healthy foods. And that can lead to positive outcomes in my body. Conversely, if you believe that, let's say, all dietary fat is bad for you. That's a powerful toxic dietary belief, by the way. So if you believe dietary fat's bad for you, you're not going to eat very much fat, and you're soon going to suffer the consequences of essential fatty acid deficiency, dry or blotchy skin, brittle hair and nails, digestive distress, low energy, brain fog, poor immunity, low sex drive, lots more. So our beliefs are quite powerful. They help create and transform the world. They drive the evolution of humanity. Just forgetting about food for a second, beliefs of any kind. You know, many people at some point in history believed in slavery. Others believed in freedom. Some people throughout history believed that illnesses were caused by exclusively by evil spirits. Some believe that there was a deeper science that could help us better understand and treat disease. Some people believe we're destined to stay on the ground, and others believed in the possibility to create machines that fly. So, beliefs move the world. Science is a set of beliefs. Culture, whatever culture you live in, it's a set of beliefs. Who you are, who I am, we're a collection of beliefs. Here's what I believe. And here's how I act on those beliefs. Here's how I live those beliefs out. And the good news is so many of our beliefs work in ways that are very good for us and amazing for us, perhaps. They move us forward. And many beliefs are either outdated or they never quite worked to begin with. Or they're simply inaccurate or wrong, harmful. Personally, me, some beliefs, I believe in a higher power. I believe that health is important. I believe in natural healing and natural medicines. I believe that the vast majority of human beings in this world are essentially good. I believe in love. I believe in the power of working on self. I believe that we all came here for a reason and a special destiny. Some people believe that life is out to get them. Some people believe whoever has the most toys win. Some people believe I gotta be perfect. Or we might believe that we can only be happy when we have our version of the ideal body or ideal work looks. The list goes on. So, recall from our very first session together that the field of nutrition itself is a set of beliefs, often contradictory ones, that we should all eat in a certain way. And really, when you actually study the history of nutrition, nutritional beliefs have changed dramatically over the last few centuries. You know, at one point in colonial America in the 1700s, it was believed that all food had the same exact nutritional value. No matter what you ate, had the same nutritional value. And scientists called this a universal aliment. All food had the same value. At one point, oats, you know, oatmeal, oats. We only fed oats to farm animals. And there was a time when using it for human consumption would have been considered laughable. And now, of course, we have granola and oatmeal and granola bars. At one point, it was surmised that if sailors on long voyages ate lemons or limes, that it would prevent them from getting this very dreaded disease, vitamin C deficiency, called scurvy. And people thought that was crazy. Few believed it. And many decades later, it became common medical knowledge. So, just giving you examples, but the bottom line is, when we let go of beliefs that don't serve us, magic can happen. Transformation happens. Healing happens. Growth happens. And we move towards our best potential. With all that in mind, let's now take a look at four key toxic dietary beliefs that I have noticed over the years powerfully hold us back, and how letting them go can powerfully help us move forward on our journey to transform, to heal emotional eating. So, I'm actually going to start with what I think is the most important toxic dietary belief that we have to look at, break down, encounter. And that toxic dietary belief is this: food is the enemy. Food is the enemy. I'm going to tell you, it still surprises me how so many people across the globe have learned to adopt this toxic belief. And the thing is, most people who have it don't even realize they have it, nor do they know the extent to which it creates absolute nutritional and emotional havoc in their lives. When we believe that food is my enemy, this toxic concept dramatically impacts our unwanted behaviors. It impacts our emotional eating, our health, our weight, our metabolism, our digestion, much more. So first, we need to ask the question, why would we believe food is my enemy? Interesting, but the answer is quite simple. We believe food is the enemy because what does food do? Makes us fat. And fat is probably the biggest possible enemy for so many people. Having body fat, being fat, the threat of being fat, the possibility of gaining any weight, that can be a living torture for so many people, and it is. We've been conditioned by the world to believe that somehow body fat means I'm going to be unlovable, I'm unacceptable, I'm going to end up being lonely and unworthy and not good enough. A lot of people believe body fat sentences me to a living hell. So, what do? We do our best to protect ourselves from this terrible destiny. What do? We try to gain control. And of course, everyone has been taught that food is what creates body fat. So food becomes the immediate enemy. Yeah, body fat's kind of the ultimate enemy for so many people, but food is the original enemy that got that body fat there in the first place. So if I can hold back and defeat the enemy called food, then I won't be fat, which means I'll be truly lovable and happy, and we'll all live happily in it ever after, and what a great outcome. That's the bottom line of this toxic belief. Food is the enemy, and it's the enemy because fat is the enemy. I wonder if you can relate to any of this, to all of this, if you know someone or many people who fit this description. Now, like all toxic dietary beliefs, we inherit this belief from the world, meaning you did not invent it. It's a virus that you catch simply by being alive, by being exposed to media, social media, movies, magazines, television, friends, family, just being alive on planet Earth. It is very easy to catch the toxic viral belief that food is my enemy because that belief is circulating everywhere. Obvious and not so obvious. So the culture of weight loss, dieting, food restriction is a worldwide phenomenon. Food is the enemy. When we believe that food is the enemy, there are many repercussions from holding and worshiping that kind of belief. In general, first and foremost, in general, believing that food is the enemy stops you from being your best self. It ensures, it guarantees that you'll never have a healthy relationship with food. Why? Because this belief goes against all of biology, all of science, all of evolutionary understanding. It goes against the wisdom of creation itself. You know this. I don't have to explain it, but I'm going to explain it anyway. Food's actually your best friend. I mean, really, you need it to survive. If you didn't have it, if there was none around, you would be desperately looking for it. Not only do you need food to survive, you need good food, enough food, the right food to thrive. We are designed by a greater wisdom to require food. And we are designed to enjoy food, to crave it, to desire it, to long for it, and to be given the gift of life and health through being an eater. It's just how it works. You can't fight that system. Think about it. Making food the enemy is no different than trying to make breathing your enemy, trying to make oxygen your enemy, or trying to make blood flow your enemy. It would be a silly and nonsensical undertaking. Let's look at it this way. If food is your enemy, then eating is a kind of criminal act. After all, no one should be sleeping with the enemy, engaging with the enemy. You shouldn't be desiring the enemy. You don't want to be intimate with the enemy and eat it. In wartime, you would never befriend the enemy you're fighting. So if we make food the enemy, then the act of eating food becomes a criminal act. You're hanging with the enemy. And as we all know, criminals need to be judged and punished. So when we eat, food is your enemy. That's your toxic belief. When you eat, you've committed a crime and you need to do self-judgment and self-punishment. So what does that look like? We've talked about this before. We self-judge and we self-punish for eating. We could punish ourselves with harsh words, self-hate, self-attack. We could punish ourselves with either more intense rules about eating. We could punish ourselves by throwing away all our good eating habits and I'm going to eat whatever I want. We can punish ourselves through harsh and intense exercise, meaning we aren't exercising because we love movement and we love feeling fit. We're exercising to cleanse ourselves from the sin of eating food and having body fat. Many people who believe that food is the enemy and hence eating is a crime will do what most criminals do, which is you hide the crime. Do the crime in secret. In other words, eat food when nobody's looking. Hide the evidence. Don't let anybody know. If you've ever done this, or if you do this, you know that this has you living in a lot of guilt, shame. You're in the constant fear of being caught or discovered. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good sneaking around like a criminal, sneaking around like a criminal in your own head. It's a terrible existence. Nobody deserves that. Now, the other thing criminals make sure of is to do any crime as quickly as possible. Going to rob a bank, you don't want to make it last 7 hours. You want to do it real fast. So when it comes to food, if food is the enemy and eating is the crime, you want to do the crime as fast as possible, which means you want to eat as fast as possible. Are you remembering what we talked about fast eating? You've already seen the potent implications of fast eating. It has a physiologic consequence. It's not just some meditative, airy-fairy thing that you do. It's not some fluffy thing. Eating fast puts us in an immediate stress response, sympathetic nervous system dominance. This decreases our digestive capacity and increases your probability of having unwanted digestive symptoms. It decreases your assimilation of nutrients. It decreases your day in, day out calorie burning capacity, deregulates your appetite, which means we will invariably be physiologically driven to eat more. All because of an eating speed. All because you weren't there when you were eating. All because you believe that food is the enemy, and therefore eating food is a crime. And as every good criminal knows, you do the crime quickly. But even if you were not eating fast, even if you weren't eating fast and you believe food is the enemy, your body will still be in a fight or flight stress response when we have this belief food is the enemy. And why? Because anytime the brain senses enemy, we automatically shift into a stress response. That's how you and I are hardwired and designed. It's a brilliant feature of the central nervous system. It's designed to keep us alive and safe. Why? Because every enemy out there, there's enemies out there. There's creatures out there that want to eat you. There might be people out there that don't have your best interests. So enemy equals threat. Threat equals bad. Threat means my life is in danger. So the moment the brain senses stress, threat, enemy, our biology puts us on red alert. The moment the brain senses enemy, your biology is on red alert. Now remember, when it comes to the stress response, the brain does not distinguish between a real or an imagined threat. Thinking about an enemy can put us in the same physiologic stress response in the same way that actually encountering that enemy in real life can. Heart rate up, blood pressure up, blood away from your midsection to arms, legs, and head for quick fighting, fleeing, and thinking. Digestive shutdown. Deregulated appetite. So, the reality is food is not your real enemy. It's an imaginary one. Food's your best friend. It really is. But we go into fight or flight physiology and chemistry anyways if you're holding the toxic belief food is my enemy. And that's what we have to change. We're creating an incredible cascade of physiochemical events that don't do us any good via a simple and erroneous belief. Can you see how powerful the mind is in its ability to impact the body? Are you beginning to understand how important it is to examine your beliefs and let go of the toxic ones that are holding you back? This is powerful stuff. This is the real Jedi mind stuff. It should also start to be apparent that if we believe food is the enemy, that we're going to be in a tremendous amount of confusion and suffering simply because there's the deepest part of you that knows, you know food is essential to life. You're smart. You know on some level you need food. You got to have it. It's your best friend. And yet we're hypnotized somehow to see it as our mortal enemy. And all the while, we're naturally hungering for food throughout the day. So that's a paradox. That is a disturbing dilemma. And you know what happens when we have disturbing dilemmas? that cause us just to be in cognitive dissonance, that cause us to be extremely uncomfortable and emotionally confused, what do? We seek relief because we're in such pain and upset around an impossible conundrum. And what do a lot of us do when we're trying to seek relief from unwanted emotions? We emotionally eat. And then in the moments that we eat, the brain's going to drive us to eat even more than usual than we need to, because stress, and specifically the stress hormone cortisol, has been desensitizing you to pleasure. So when you're stressed, you're desensitized to pleasure, which means you actually, technically, scientifically need to eat more of the pleasurable food that you're eating to register and feel pleasure. You need more food to register and feel pleasure compared to had you been relaxed when you ate it in the optimum state of digestion, assimilation, calorie burning, natural appetite regulation, which is parasympathetic nervous system dominance, relaxation response. There's even more to contend with here. Believing that food is the enemy will often make us want to go as long as we can without eating. After all, the more you can avoid the enemy, the better. I don't want to be engaging with the enemy. That's not fun. That's not safe. So I want to go as long as I can with no enemy, without engaging the enemy, i.e. without food. So I have to artificially control my appetite. And if we're trying to artificially control our appetite, the result is, yeah, you might be eating low calorie, low fat, low protein, low carb, any combination of those. You might be skipping meals. And if we're artificially denying the body necessary energy and nutrition, this will inevitably lead, predictably lead, to intense food cravings, which can lead us to believe that we have a willpower issue with food. I've got no control. What's my issue? But the problem is we're believing a biologically impossible belief that can make human life miserable for decades. If you shortchange the body on food and nutrition, it will always, always, always at some point scream, hungry. And you'll be neurologically driven to eat. Once again, you don't have a willpower problem with food. You don't have a control problem. Our problem is that we are making food something that it is not, an enemy. Our problem is thinking that doesn't work. Our problem here is a toxic dietary belief that is holding us back on every level. So, I think you know what's next. Your task is actually pretty simple. Not easy, perhaps, but simple in concept. You got to make friends with food. You have to make friends with food. Sounds scary, maybe. Sounds strange. Because you know something, we get used to the enemy that we're used to. We get accustomed to it. We're familiar with it. It's kind of like a friend, even though it's your enemy. It's the enemy you know. It's the devil you know. And that's your task, to make friends with food. It's time to let that toxic belief called food is the enemy. You got to let it die a slow, steady death. You got to get with the reality of life, that food is a blessing. Food is beautiful. Food is not to be feared. Food is your friend. And as you begin to embrace that food is your friend, you'll literally put yourself into the physiologic relaxation response. You've called off the dogs. You go into relaxation chemistry, parasympathetic nervous system dominance, because you feel safe. When we feel safe, we relax. When we feel threatened, we're stressed. Not rocket science. The moment you feel safe, you relax. And the moment you relax, you're in your most healthy, natural, easy appetite regulation. The moment you're relaxed, you're in your most powerful digestion. You're in your most powerful assimilation. And you're cultivating your most powerful day in, day out calorie burning capacity. Wow! Think about that. All by changing a belief. Share with you a story. I once worked with a young man. I'll call him Robert. He was 39 years old when I saw him. He wanted to stop emotionally eating and he wanted to lose 45 pounds. So Robert works in real estate. He spent a lot of time at his desk Turns out in his younger years, high school and college, he was pretty athletic and fit, and weight was never an issue for him. But over the years, as he said, the weight just seemed to creep on. He said that he mostly emotionally ate at night when he wasn't at the office. And Robert attributed his weight gain to inactivity and eating too much food. And he attributed his emotional eating to not enough self-control. I always ask people, so why do you think you emotionally eat? People have different reasons, not enough willpower, not enough control, or I don't know. So he just wanted more control. He mentioned to me that he actually was an emotional eater for as long as he could remember. When he was younger, when he was a kid, he'd eat sugar and chips whenever he was bored or afraid or stressed or lonely. But it never really mattered to him because he didn't gain any weight because he was very active. But now, of course, things are different, and he actually feels embarrassed. He's embarrassed about his weight. He's embarrassed about his own lack of control, as he defines it. So, of course, Robert has done what everybody else seems to do under such circumstances of wanting to lose weight. He dieted. Now, by the time I saw him, he'd been dieting for 15 years, of course, without any lasting success. He'd lose weight, gain it back, lose it, gain it back. Now, here's the thing. I gotta listen to people. As I listened to Robert speak about his efforts and his frustration, I heard a familiar story. You know, he'd limit his calories, he'd maybe skip some meals, he followed the latest diet very religiously, but after a week or two, he'd be ravenous. during the time he was dieting, he would feel very deprived, he'd feel anxious. Even though he's dieting, he's worried about gaining weight, he's worried about not losing weight. He's worried about when the inevitable, he said, would happen, which is that at some point he'd feel out of control and eat. And indeed, that usually happened by no later than week two. And when week two would arrive, he'd throw away all his dieting efforts and he'd eat everything in sight. And that's what he was defining as emotional eating. I can't control myself. I'm eating everything in sight. It's kind of a misdiagnosis. Now, perhaps the most poignant thing that I noticed was that Robert was in a constant battle with food. Listen to people's languaging. Listen to your own languaging. He'd say things like, if only I had more control, I just need to win this fight. Ooh. He would say, I'm trying to not let food get the best of me. At one point when I asked him, how can I best help you? He said to me, I just need you to convince me that I can win this battle. Okay. So this is about a battle. This is about a fight. This is about how not letting the other side, food, get the best of you. Robert clearly believed that food was his enemy. And because he believed it was his enemy, he's always feeling like a loser because he's losing. He's eating. So food is your enemy. Every time you eat, you're a loser. God, that's terrible. Robert felt defeated by food. And when he felt like a loser when it came to food and weight loss, it was clear that that loser mentality was spilling over into the rest of his life. What happens with food is connected to other parts of life. It'll spill over into other parts of life. You know, Robert told me he wanted to be in a relationship and get married, but he secretly felt terrible about himself. He had lost confidence as a person, as a man. He constantly wondered what others were thinking about his weight. And he'd always imagine that people were silently judging him, even if they were being friendly. That people were saying to themselves what he was saying to himself. And all this was driven by his belief that I can overcome my enemy called food. So, I decided this is where we gotta work. This is the place to play. First and foremost, I explained to Robert everything I just laid out for you here about the toxic dietary belief called food is the enemy. We have to educate people. We have to educate each other. I highlighted for him the absolute illogic of that belief and that strategy. And I told him the proof that this belief, food is my enemy, doesn't work, is that it hasn't gotten him any success, and it has him feeling defeated and insecure. You are using a strategy that, by your own admission, does not work. I emphasized to him how the stress response created by this belief was taking his metabolism in the opposite direction of where he truly wanted it to go. Robert was constantly bracing against the knowing that he would eventually get hungry and eat. He was living like a caged animal waiting to get hurt. I highlighted how this belief that food is the enemy was essentially crushing him for no good reason. And I told him that the remedy was simple. You need to learn to make friends with food. And that was the essence of our work together, adopting the new belief that food is my friend. Learning to embrace food, letting go of the self-chosen stress of this toxic belief that was deregulating his appetite and causing him to eat even more. So along the way, Robert learned how to slow down with food. He did so many of the practices that you've already learned in this program. 5 months' time, the guy was a new man. He lost half the weight that he was trying to lose. He felt great. He was on his way, and he knew it. He felt, most important, he felt relieved. He felt a tremendous sense of relief, like a weight was lifted from him, that he didn't need to fight food anymore. And as a byproduct, he was inspired for the first time ever to learn more about healthy eating. He never really paid attention to nutrition. But he was seeing how not fighting food, not only was it a relief, he was losing weight, he was feeling better about himself, and it inspired him to want to do more good things. So, here's your first journaling exercise for this week. How do I express the toxic belief, food is my enemy? How does this belief cause me to think? What does it make me feel? How does it impact what I eat, when I eat, how much I eat? How does this belief hold me back from living my best life? How does it truly show up in my life? Now really give this some thought and examine yourself here. Be thorough in your journaling. You can always come back to it. Once you've completed this, I'd like you to journal about how food is actually your friend. How is food here to serve you? How is it here to make you feel good? How is food here to keep you alive and healthy? How can you better welcome food into your life? Ask that question. What promises can you make to yourself about how you wish to see food in a positive way moving forward? Wonder to yourself, how can I imagine this impacting me in a positive way? And how might it impact the people around me? For extra credit, I want you to practice repeating a new food mantra to yourself. So instead of food is the enemy, I want you to find a better belief to replace the old and toxic one. So instead of silently saying to yourself, food is my enemy, I gotta win this battle, consciously say to yourself whenever you eat or whenever you're hungry, just make the affirmation, food is my friend. Food is my best friend, or I embrace and welcome food into my life in a joyous way, or whatever affirmation you can invent that just feels right for you. The bottom line here is that you're deliberately inviting in a new and better belief to replace the old and toxic one. Changing your mind. You're reinventing your relationship with food. You got to be patient with yourself here. You got to give yourself time. You have to relax into this practice. Things are not going to change completely overnight, because if you've been seeing food as the enemy for a long time, then it takes time to unwind that. This is brain retraining. You are shifting away from an ingrained belief, a neural pathway that you've likely had for a long time, and that habitually repeats itself. You don't wake up in the morning and think, I have to remind myself today that food is my enemy, otherwise it's going to sneak up behind me and do something bad. No, that toxic belief, that unwanted habit of thought is just repeating itself unconsciously over and over and over again. How do you change an unconscious pattern? You introduce consciousness. That's your task. This is your life. You are reclaiming your birthright to have peace with food. And you have peace with food by creating peace with food, by doing behaviors that demonstrate peace with food. You're consciously and thoughtfully changing your beliefs. You got to trust yourself and trust in the wisdom of life that designed you to be an eater. You can't beat that system. You're not better than it. Okay, my friends, let's look at the second of the four toxic dietary beliefs that I'd like to talk with you about. And it's this: appetite is my enemy. Got that one? Appetite is my enemy. Now, of course, this toxic belief is, it's a cousin of food is my enemy. Because essentially, every time we sense the need for food, whenever our hunger is speaking or our appetite is calling to us, that's the cue for us to go into fear mode. And why would we go into fear mode when we get hungry? Well, because same thing, body fat is the ultimate enemy, which means food is the enemy. And the thing that makes me want to eat food is my appetite. So you're looking at the chain of command of your beliefs, and you're making sure that you're now going to stay awake in the cascade of beliefs that lead you to follow a bad map into a neighborhood that you don't want to be in. The result of thinking that appetite is the enemy is that people get triggered. You get triggered when you feel hunger. Triggered when I feel hunger, let me say that in another way, you immediately go into the physiologic stress response the moment you're aware of your appetite. It's a Pavlovian reaction. Name Pavlov ring a bell for you? Okay. It's the kind of response where you're taking two stimuli and they're coupled together. You ring the bell and then you feed the dog. You ring the bell, you feed the dog. Every time that the dog hears a bell, its mouth starts to salivate because it knows it's getting food. Now, once you ring the bell and feed the dog a bunch of times, enough times, that dog will salivate for the rest of its life every time it hears a bell, even though you might not do that behavior with it anymore. You might ring bells and never feed it again. You'll feed it some other time. So the Pavlovian conditioned response, feel hungry, go into stress response. Sense appetite, go into stress response. Now, here's the thing. When you believe that appetite is the enemy, you're going to do your best to artificially suppress your appetite, because that's how you deal with an enemy. You try to beat it down. Problem is, though, appetite cannot be suppressed for long. It always comes back, and oftentimes it comes back with a vengeance. It comes back with a voice. It comes back with power, meaning the biological urge to eat when we have suppressed appetite can be overwhelming. Once again, you're going to think, oh my God, I got a willpower problem. I'm going to blame it on some personal weakness or character fault. No control. But the problem is that appetite cannot be denied in the first place. And the belief that my appetite, my hunger is the enemy, that's a battle you can't possibly win. Nobody wins that battle. Think of the pain and confusion that that toxic belief can cause. You're trying to go against the nature of your biology, the wisdom of life, the demand of your genetics. Some part of us has convinced ourselves to believe that we can somehow will our way to a victory over our inborn desire, appetite, hunger, over our inborn desire for food. And it's kind of ironic because the more you suppress appetite, the stronger it becomes. And the more loudly our appetite signals its demands, the more vigorously you're going to try to fight it. And when you finally give in, we often find ourselves binge eating or emotionally eating in a way that feels completely out of control. And then when we feel that, there's an extra helping of guilt and shame and an extra feeling of failure. Now, if you're feeling a lot of guilt and a lot of shame and a lot of failure, these feelings are going to reinforce our belief that, see, I'm not lovable. I'm not worthy. Something is wrong with me. After all, if I was a worthy human being, I'd be able to control my appetite and not eat like a ravenous wolf. Can you see how this belief, food is my enemy, appetite is my enemy, it sets you up for failure? We've invented a scenario where we can't have success, and then we punish ourselves for not being able to do the impossible, i.e. transcend our biology. As long as you do battle with your appetite, as long as you go into a stress response when you have an appetite, as long as you believe that appetite is your enemy, that's how long you will be in the kind of suffering that will never go away. You have picked the wrong battle. You're fighting an enemy that's really your friend. So, as we've seen, whenever the brain senses enemy, we immediately go into sympathetic nervous system dominance, fight or flight response, with all the attendant details that happen. Diminished digestion, assimilation, calorie burning, appetite deregulation, increased fat storage, weight loss resistance. And, you know, this whole experience of battling an imaginary enemy that can't be defeated, and feeling guilt and shame when you do end up in defeat and you do end up eating, that guilt and shame is so strong, those feelings of being defeated are so strong that you want to get out of those uncomfortable emotions. And how do we get out of uncomfortable emotions? All different kinds of ways, but for a lot of us, it means food. It means emotional eating. So we're driven to emotionally eat because we're trying to remove the discomfort that arises from trying to not eat. Can you see the crazy irony here? As always, the existence of this toxic belief, it ain't your fault. You did not invent the belief appetite is my enemy. It's viral. You caught it from the world. It's like an actual virus that you catch. You didn't create it, but if you got it, you got to deal with it. You have to address it. You have to assume responsibility to help send it on its way. If you believe that appetite is the enemy, you will be in a near constant state of red alert. That's because, like most human beings, you'll feel your hunger signals a bunch of times during the day, at least 3, likely 5. And if you're trying to artificially suppress your appetite by ignoring it or underfeeding, you're going to be in a constant state of hunger. Gosh, I remember a friend of mine who had a farm in Hawaii. He had a cat, and he wasn't a big cat lover, but he wanted to have a cat so the cat would eat the rats on the property and the mice. And in order for the cat to eat the rats and the mice on the property, to even be motivated to do that, he had to not feed the cat. So essentially, the cat had to fend for itself. And there's plenty of mice and rats on the property, but the cat had to fend for itself. And when I visited him, he told me this cat was about 8 years old, and he never fed the cat once. And the cat got by on hunting. Now, I'm going to tell you something. That was not a happy little house pet. That cat was agitated. It was constantly on the move. It was constantly looking around. It wasn't the kind of creature that sits in your lap. It's not all lovable. It's not a relaxed creature. And that's kind of what happens to us when we're hungry all the time. We're agitated. We're walking through the world moody and off balance, and we're needy, and we get distracted easy, and we're constantly thinking about food and worrying about food. You end up fantasizing about food. And then you think your problem is that you think about food and fantasize about food too much. And if you only stop thinking about it and fantasize about it, you'll be free of food and you'll be at peace. And peace means you're not thinking and fantasizing about it. But the reason why you're thinking about it all the time is because you're artificially suppressing your appetite, but you're hungry. And you're trying not to eat, but you're hungry. Many people, by the way, who suffer from issues of fatigue, mood issues, irritability, brain fog, they're simply hungry. They're starving themselves. They're dieting. They're underfeeding themselves. That's no way to live. A human being doesn't feel inspired. They don't engage in their higher thinking. We cannot be intimate. We cannot feel any good feelings in the moment to any great degree if I am distracted by my hunger, distracted by my appetite. A constantly hungry and underfed human being is in an ongoing state of agitation, and it's a very one-dimensional experience. You will likely be an unlikable person to others because you're so on edge. And again, it's completely predictable that the more we try to suppress our appetite, the more it's going to result in the brain finally overpowering our tiny ego and scream hungry and demanding that we eat. And then we feel out of control, and then we feel shame, and then we medicate that shame with food. So you're seeing the cycle. So once again, the remedy is simple. We learn to make friends with our appetite. We learn to embrace the beautiful and natural urge to eat that lives inside us and that lives inside every creature in existence. Your job is to join the rest of us on planet Earth. Accept your birthright as a human being who eats. Appetite means you're alive. No appetite means you're dead. Choosing food, choosing to be an eater, choosing to accept your hunger is choosing life with a capital L. Choosing to fight your appetite is actually going against life, and it's going against your life. Choosing to fight food and fight appetite is choosing darkness. Now, I'm not trying to be dramatic here. I'm trying to help you see that these hidden toxic beliefs are driving unhappiness. They're driving emotional eating, and they're creating weight loss resistance, all the things you don't want. So here's your exercise for this toxic dietary belief. Do some journaling. Journal about your relationship with your appetite. What's your relationship with your appetite? Let's talk about it. Describe that relationship. Be honest. What happens in your mind the moment you feel hungry? What do you say to yourself? Do you fight your appetite? Do you fear it? How do you resist it? What kind of behaviors do you do to suppress your hunger, your appetite? What happens when your hunger finally wins out after you've been trying to push it down? Do you binge eat? Do you emotionally eat? What feelings come up for you? How do you deal with them? How do your beliefs about appetite impact your social life? Or eating with your family? How does it impact your children, your partner? Okay, once you've journaled about your relationship to appetite, consider this practice. Every time you feel hungry, bless that hunger, meaning compliment it, welcome it, smile at it. Oh, there's my beautiful appetite. There's my wonderful appetite. Thanks for showing up, appetite. Smile at it. Say something kind and encouraging to it. Show yourself that you are welcoming your urge to eat. Create a new neural pathway. Create a new habit. You are retraining your brain. And by retraining your brain, by retraining just the old conditioning, it's not like there's something wrong with you. No, you've caught this from the world, and now you're untangling it. In the fastest and the best way possible. This is your time to finally let go of toxic beliefs that don't serve you in a good way. And letting go of such beliefs, it requires your attention, your awareness, your efforts. Requires that you see the light, that this is good, this is smart, this makes sense. Okay, let's look at our third noteworthy toxic dietary belief, and it's this. If only, then I'd be happy. If only, fill in the blank, then I'd be happy. Meaning, if only I was thin, then I'd be happy. If only I could stick to my diet, then I'd be happy. If only I could lose a specific amount of weight from a specific body part, then I'd be happy. If only I could completely control my appetite, then I'd be happy. You get the picture here? So the toxic dietary belief is, if only, fill in the blank, then I'd be happy. Now, notice, this toxic dietary belief has us living in the future. And if you're living in the future, you ain't in the present. So we're living for a day, someday, we don't quite know when, in the future. only I lose weight, then I'll be happy. If only I have the ideal body, then I'll be happy. If only I'm eating perfectly, then I'll be happy. If only I could fit into these clothes, then I'll be happy. If only I wasn't emotionally eating, then I'd be happy. We're essentially saying to ourselves and to everyone around us and to life itself, hey, y'all, I am not happy right now. In fact, I cannot be happy right now. In fact, I will not be happy right now. We are staking our claim to live an unfulfilled life. Why? Because we're saying happiness can only come to me when I have the right weight, the right body, the right shape, or whatever it is that we're promising ourselves will allow us to finally be happy. Now, of course, there's a good reason why we'd say, if only I could lose weight or have the ideal body, then I'd be happy. The reason, it's a good reason, is that we believe that who we are right now is not the real me. So we're sitting around thinking, who I am right now, this isn't the real me. The current person that I am is somehow an unfinished product. I am still in the waiting room of life. I'm on eternal hold on the telephone. So we're essentially saying that the real me is someone who looks different, someone who weighs different, someone who eats different, etc., etc. And because we're not that person right now, we cannot possibly live our real life now. Therefore, we cannot possibly be happy. Therefore, I'm going to be whatever the opposite of happy is. I can only live my real life in the future when I achieve these specific results. So check that out. That has you living on the sidelines of life. It's going to have you hiding or isolating. It's going to have us hiding our light under a bushel. You might even feel like an imposter. Well, this isn't the real me. This is an imposter. The real me is this person in the future that I'm going to be, which is happy, if only I can lose the weight, eat the right food, have the ideal body, etc. Or we feel ashamed somehow because the real me would never look like I do. The real me would never weigh what I weigh. So we're beating ourselves up in a very unkind way. We're putting ourselves in an impossible conundrum. And we feel stuck because we are. And we're stuck because of belief. We're stuck because of belief that says, I can't be happy until the scale says a certain number, the almighty scale. So we stay small, we don't express ourselves fully, we don't express our truest feelings. I might push away love and intimacy. I might push away sexuality or physical contact and relationship. I'm going to believe, how could I be my most confident self? We're thinking everyone other than us are the ones having the fun, if they happen to look how we wish we were looking. So it's easy in this state to compare ourselves to others. And we keep hoping that the day comes when we can look different, when we can weigh different, when we can eat different, so I can finally burst onto the stage of life and go, ta-da, and here's me, my truest self, finally. And, you know, the curtains go up, the applause happen. I don't know that that ever happens. So like all other toxic beliefs, this belief generates a fight or flight response, stress chemistry, sympathetic nervous system dominance. That's because you're constantly worried about being something you're not. We're always trying to get somewhere but never arriving. We're constantly worried and stressed about the fact that who I am right now is not the real me, is not who I want to be. That's anxiety producing. That's stress producing. That creates a physiologic event in your body, which does all the things that you don't want your body to do. It's a terrible feeling to feel like there's like you're an imposter, or that you're living in the wrong body, or you got the wrong life, or you don't have the right life. Until, if only, I had the right body and the right weight and the right shape and the right diet. That's a major stressor. And it creates everything that you don't want in the body. Creates weight loss resistance. It creates the exact kind of chemistry, stress chemistry, increased cortisol and insulin, that for most humans is going to signal the body to store weight, store fat, not build muscle, i.e. your calorie burning tissue. All this from a toxic viral belief that you caught from the world, and once you catch it, you continue to reproduce it. You repeat it in your mind every day. The belief instructs your brain to repeat it. And instead of moving us towards the thing we want, we say we want weight loss. I say I want to control my appetite. I say I want my natural weight and shape. We're actually moving in the opposite direction because of the stress response that's being created day in and day out. And once again, because we're creating stress and unwanted emotion and unwanted feeling, all that discomfort, all those unwanted emotions of shame and guilt of not being the real me and not being the person I say I want to be, that's not going to feel good. I want to feel better, feel bad, eat food, feel better. So that belief, as all other toxic beliefs, locks in emotional eating. We lock in the very thing we're trying to free ourselves from. I know you've heard me tell this story before, but it's important to hear how we unknowingly trap ourselves, how we unconsciously create the opposite metabolism of what we want, how we unwittingly keep ourselves trapped in a cycle of emotional eating. So until we change our mind, our beliefs, and specifically the toxic and ineffective beliefs, we stay stuck. I hope you're seeing, by the way, that any strategy that we use to transform emotional eating that's stressful, any strategy you use to try to transform any unwanted eating habit, if it produces anxiety, if it's self-attacking, if it's self-rejecting, that's going to cause you at some point to want to turn to food. Food regulates our emotions. Feel bad, eat food, feel better. Good news is it's never too late to change. It's never too late to be reborn. It's never too late to claim your birthright of a happy, relaxed self-acceptance that allows you to be the real you today. So, if you're a person who's living with this belief, here's your ultimate task. Start being the real you now. No more waiting. Stop the nonsense. Call a ceasefire. Stop trying to change your body or your eating so you can be happy. You can keep trying to change your body, but don't do it so I can be happy. Don't use your body or your relationship with food as an excuse to not live your best life. You want to have a better relationship with food so you can be happy, so you can be the best expression of you that you came here to possibly be. So start today. You begin to be the real you now. So this is all about you stepping away from the sidelines of life. This is about you choosing to get in the game now. Join life now. Claim your place now. Be you now. Say what you think. Express yourself. Be more bold. Be adventurous. Who's the real you going to be when you lose weight, eat what you want, have the right body? If only I can have these things, then I'm going to be happy. Well, who's that happy person going to be? You're going to be more adventurous? Be adventurous now. You're going to do the things you dream about doing? Do them now. Feel the things you dream about feeling in the future? Now. Make your life more interesting? Now. Make your life worth more living? Now. Just pretend your time on earth is limited and precious, which it is. Start making every day count. Throw away excuses. Choose to be the real you starting today. With that in mind, here's a journaling exercise to get things going. What do you believe when it comes to the toxic belief? If only, fill in the blank, then I'd be happy. Meaning, do you believe that if only you could lose weight, then you'd be happy? If only I can, my shape changes and I'll be happy. My eating changes. When I have the perfect relationship, millions of dollars in the bank. Just make a list of all the ways that you believe that you'll be the real you, the happy you, in the future when things are different. And I want you to be as honest with yourself and as thorough as you can possibly be. Then, write a list of all the qualities you will have and express when you imagine that you're going to be the real you. Like, who's this person going to be? So essentially, you're journaling about exactly who the real is, who the real you is, when these dreams come true. So what are you going to wear? How are you going to act? How are you going to feel? What's your social life going to be like? Your relationship life, your sex life, pleasure. How will you speak? How will you communicate? How will your personality change? More outgoing, more confident, more sensual, more the life of the party. Whatever it is you think. I want you to make an exhaustive list, a thorough list of who you imagine you'll be and what you do differently when you become the real you. From there, I'd like you to look at that list and start to do as many things as possible on the list that you can begin to do right now. Meaning, you don't need to lose weight to be more confident. You don't need to lose weight to be more outgoing and social or to feel and be more sexy. People of all sizes and all shapes can put on their sexy right now. People of all shapes and all sizes are being their best self right now. So once again, if you believe you're going to be more outgoing when you're the real you, start to practice that today. If you think you'll be ready for love when you're the real you, start be ready for love now. Think you're going to wear your favorite clothes that you're going to fit into? Okay, buy new favorite clothes. If you think you're going to feel lighter, start feeling lighter now. A lot of times we just feel heavy. I'm talking about it's kind of mentally, emotionally heavy. Lighten up. If you think you're going to speak your mind more now. Don't wait for life to begin in the future. So in essence, this exercise is all about asking yourself, what do I want from having the ideal body or diet? You make a list and then you begin to live that life right now. You're being the person you think you're going to be in the future now. Yet another way of saying that is you're creating the results you're expecting at the end of your journey, in the beginning of your journey. This way you ensure success. Now, don't just practice this for a few days or a week. Give yourself at least 3 months. I mean that. To make this way of thinking and living a solid new habit. This is a life-changing exercise. You owe it to yourself. The world wants you to be your best self. No one is demanding that you lose weight or you look different or you eat different before you can be your best and happiest self. So you have the key to set yourself free here. Okay, let's take a moment and look at our fourth and final toxic dietary belief. So the last toxic dietary belief that we're going to look at today is this. I must be perfect. Meaning, some version of, I need to eat perfect. I need to act perfect. I need to look perfect. I need to weigh perfect. I need to somehow be this perfect human being that I define, according to my definition, as perfect. And nothing short of perfection will do. Now, with this toxic belief, anything I do that is not perfect will be judged harshly, and I will appropriately punish myself. I just want to say that our belief in I must be perfect, that's a soul killer. That crushes us. If you're a perfectionist, then there's a good chance that you sort of know this, but you don't realize how much it robs you of your life and tortures you. It's a constant nagging voice that never lets us rest and never lets us have peace. It's a voice inside of us, a persona, an archetype, the perfectionist. The archetype of perfectionist, it forces us into an absolutely impossible dilemma where we're holding ourselves to a standard that can never be met. It's causing us to live in a constant state of striving and coming up short. Now, what's interesting about this one is the voice of perfectionism is very self-assured. It believes in its own supremacy. After all, who could argue with the desire to be perfect? Perfection is, we believe, the ultimate state of the human being. Perfectionism seems so noble. So most people who feel gripped by perfectionism are convinced that this is the way. We can wholeheartedly believe in the loftiness of course, attaining to perfectionism is so wonderful. It's the best thing you could attain to. But that's part of the insidious and toxic nature of perfectionism. That's one of the nasty side effects of the virus. Perfectionism convinces us that it's wholesome and nutritious, while it's actually poisonous. Now, we actually might have moments when we feel we're being perfect. Yeah, this is going so good. I'm eating the exact foods in the exact amount. I reach my target weight. I'm feeling so great. But the moment we stray from our diet or our target weight changes, we go up a kilo, down a kilo, we fall from grace. And it's a long fall. And we punish ourselves with all the typical punishments, the harsh words, the self-attack, the intense exercise, the stringent dietary rules, the letting go of all the rules, etc. Or we might live, so we're living in this all or nothing state where we go from trying to be perfect to simply just throwing it all away and being reckless and then trying to get back to perfect again. Woo! That's like being in a car, like out of control. Once again, I want to remind you, like all toxic dietary beliefs, you did not invent this. You inherited it from the world, and it's a vicious one. This virus entered your system like an unwanted guest. From a very young age, you have been fed images of perfect-looking men and women, girls and boys. Your favorite Disney movies reinforce those images of impossible-looking humans. Social media, all the filters you can apply to your own images, it just reinforces that. We're inundated with Photoshop fictional world. And we convince ourselves that this world is kind of real. Perfectionism would have us constantly comparing ourselves to others. And when you compare yourself to others, you're always going to come up short. It has us incessantly worrying about what other people are thinking of us and imagining that they're judging us as harshly as we are judging our own self. By the way, see if you can find the person. But I don't think you will. Nobody is walking around wanting you to be perfect. Nobody is holding you to the standards of perfection that you hold yourself to. With all due respect, nobody cares like that. And if by chance somebody is holding you to some impossible standard of perfection, they need to change that or they don't belong in your life. Perfectionism often has us living in our head, meaning we stop enjoying our body. We stop experiencing true pleasure. If I'm constantly looking at my body saying, this isn't perfect, that's not perfect, this is not perfect, that, but you can't enjoy yourself. The need to have the perfect body or perfect weight, I see this so often. It results in a lack of physical connection to our own self or physical connection, sexual connection to others. It can make us very self-centered. Why? Because it takes a lot of work to be perfect. So we have to be thinking about it all the time, acting on it constantly. Perfectionism kills intimacy. If you're a parent and you're caught in perfectionism, then you're subtly teaching this to your child. You're passing it along to them. They deserve better. Our children need us to do our own work on self, transforming your toxic dietary beliefs, transforming your perfectionism, not only benefits you, benefits your children. If you're in a significant relationship, then your perfectionism is likely putting up a wall between you and your partner. In essence, you're sleeping more with perfectionism. You're interacting more with perfectionism than you are with your lover. Like all other toxic beliefs, perfectionism, it generates fight or flight stress chemistry. And that's simply because the pursuit of perfectionism is anxiety producing and has us living in agitation and self-attack and self-judgment. And all these catalyze the physiologic stress response with all the attendant qualities that you don't want. So instead of moving you towards weight loss, towards a naturally managed appetite, towards your natural weight and shape, the toxic belief called perfectionism actually moves you away from it because it's creating stress physiology and stress chemistry. And on top of that, it's creating discomfort. It's creating emotional dysregulation, which means you need to somehow deal with that because you're feeling bad. And as you remember, as the brain remembers, as your DNA remembers, feel bad, eat food, eat foods, feel better, we're driven to emotionally eat. So, once again, your task is straightforward. It's let go of perfect. It's liberating yourself from the tyranny of perfectionism. So here's a journaling exercise that I think is going to be a good one to get you started. How does the need to be perfect show up in my life? So describe your relationship with perfectionism. What behaviors do you do to be perfect with food, with your body, with weight, with any other part of life? Are you trying to be the perfect partner or friend or employee or daughter or son? How does your belief that you need to be perfect hold you back? How does it harm you? How does it impact your relationship? All relationships. How does it affect your sex life? Your ability to give pleasure, to receive it. How does it influence your social life, your work? How does your need to be perfect, how does it make you show up in the world? I want you to be as thorough as you can, honest as you can, in examining how the need to be perfect impacts your life. Once you feel complete, just ask yourself, does anything in this journaling exercise stand out for me? Any insights come up? Any aha moments? And from here, your task is simple. You adopt the long-term practice of letting go of perfectionism. First, you choose to let go of being perfect. You clearly see that perfectionism is harming me and it's affecting the people that I love and care about. You got to get clear that perfectionism doesn't work. You got to get off your high horse. Once you're clear that this is something you wish to work on and transform, your practice is to catch yourself every time you hold yourself to a perfectionist standard. Perfectionism is an unconscious, automatic, self-reproducing habit. So the only way to change something that's unconscious and automatic, note the word unconscious, is to introduce consciousness. Here, consciousness means to stay awake when the perfectionist voice in you, when the perfectionist archetype in you takes over. So notice your perfectionist behaviors. Stop counting calories. Stop weighing yourself on the scale. Interrupt any negative internal dialogue. Interrupt any thought that's driving you to be perfect. And in fact, practice being imperfect. Embrace your hunger. Embrace your appetite. Embrace your emotions. Embrace your desires. Embrace your messiness. A lot of times you're a mess. It's okay. Be a mess. Embrace your shortcomings. Laugh at them. Embrace your body as it is right now. If you emotionally eat, acknowledge to yourself that this is a sign that I'm not perfect and it's okay. See if you could love and accept yourself as if it was your child or your loved one or your best friend who was struggling with emotional eating. Study the world. Notice that it's not a perfect world, that it's not a perfect life, that there's no one you know who is actually perfect. And if you think they are, then you don't really know them. Use your insight and your awareness and your wisdom and your smarts to clearly see that you trying to be perfect is a dead-end strategy. If you have a weight loss number that you think is going to make everything good, that's perfectionism. This is a lifelong practice and one that will liberate you in ways that, my friends, I don't think you can imagine. So, we've covered a lot of ground today. We've looked at the power of our beliefs and how they can drive our emotions, how our beliefs can drive our metabolism, our health, our appetite, our weight, and of course, our happiness. We've covered some really good journaling exercises and practices that can make a big difference in your journey. So, time now for you to do the good work on self, and I appreciate you putting in that time. I encourage you to put in that time. Find the inspiration from within. Feel good about all the little successes. Remember to celebrate them. Stay with yourself. Be your own best friend. Be kind to yourself on this journey. This concludes session number 5 of the Emotional Eating Breakthrough. I will see you in the next session. Take care.
Thank you.